and welcome to The Squeal, PIC Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Today, we wrap up a series on animal handling, which we hope you'll share with barn personnel, facility designers, and managers. Important questions are answered with today's guest, Colorado State's Dr. Lily Edwards.
I'm an assistant professor here at Colorado State University in the Department of Animal Sciences. And so my research areas, they actually tend to these days be a little bit more cattle focused than pig focused. But I got my PhD here and did focus on some pig work actually with PIC. And then I teach as well.
PIC's Chuck Boer.
I work in the tech service as wean to finish. Been doing that for the last 3 or 4 years. I work a lot with Latin America, Mexico on south. Everything from when the pigs wean till, in some cases, all the way through looking at meat quality in some of the smaller operations.
And PIC's Brandon Fields.
Brandon Fields, manager of the Applied Meat Science Group, basically working with our technical services to the further processor, slaughter plant, and integrated customers.
In agriculture in general, we tend to think of efficiency of process as equating to best use of environment. If the pig's growing well, he's happy, she's happy. Now take me on to the research we have or the view of the animal welfare. I don't think they equate one to one. The pig that arrives at the plant with the least bruising is the pig that shows the best animal welfare, animal handling, but perhaps it does. When you talk with people outside the industry and they ask about animal welfare, which is certainly a recurring question today, how you respond to them about what we're doing in our job to make sure that that is an important factor that we take into consideration. Does a pig that grew well and arrives at the plant with less stress, does that mean animal welfare has been optimal?
I'm going to defer that one to Lily. Sorry. I do want to touch on your second point a little bit, though, about how we deal with that from the industry. You know, when you get those questions, if you work in the industry, you almost feel like you got slapped in the face, because these pigs are our livelihood. And we, you know, depending on where you are in the animal production sector, you may have raised that pig for 6 months. Okay, it's an ear tag number, but you probably remember if you treated that pig for an illness. You know, if that pig did well, he's a good one. He's the one that comes up to the gate every time. So there's a vested interest by everyone in this industry. And that's not to say there's not a bad actor here and there, which give us all bad names, but truly the corporate farming. I hate that terminology, because it's not a big corporation that could care less. There may be a corporate entity behind the production, but the people raising the pigs are you and me and farmers all around the world, and they treat those animals the same way they were treated, and probably much better than they were treated 100 years ago. So from that aspect, you know, we treat the animals as best we can because it's the right thing to do, and it ultimately makes us more money as well.
Yeah, so I think if you think about kind of efficiency and growth and health, those are certainly components of kind of how we assess animal well-being. Those have been expanded. So I think in the past, sometimes we only relied on that. And we said, well, if it's performing well, the animal must be happy and healthy. And I think that kind of the science around that has changed a little bit. So there's a bunch of different frameworks that people kind of talk about them. But I like the concept. It's the scientist's name is Fraser, but Fraser's three circles. And so it has this basic health and functioning, which is kind of the performance and health. And then we focus on mental state. So we've talked a lot about it today. I mean, minimizing fear and distress is a huge thing of what we do. And so we do focus on that. I think maybe we don't always articulate that because it's not the first thing we think about. But I think we all articulated that multiple times today. And then the other one is this concept of natural living. I think when we think about animals going to slaughter, that maybe isn't as relevant. But when we think about when we raise the animals, it's basically providing the animals some ability to kind of express natural behaviors or their nature. the thing when we think about efficiency that I like to relate back to, if we can identify, hey, this change in management, which improves all these parts of animal welfare, but it also improves the bottom line, to me, that's how we need to draw it back a little bit to the reason for doing it. Because that's an easy reason, right? If it improves welfare and improves the economics of the system, then it's a no-brainer. And I think sometimes those things are hard to quantify, and we don't always bring it back as well as we could.
You're asking or commenting about maybe bruising or something being optimal welfare. I think that the absence of bruising, et cetera, absence of stress pigs is a definite expression of adequate welfare, that we are giving them what they need so that they can arrive at that destination in good condition. It starts back on the farm well before we begin to send a market, just by walking the pens, getting the pigs used to people, so that they're not absolutely scared to see someone show up. The thing is, you can walk that pen every day with one purpose of caretaking the pigs, and I've been there and done that. But when you come in there and you've got a sort board and a rattle paddle and there's someone else, they know something's different, and they go on some level of alert. But at least if they're used to having people around, they don't get quite as excited, especially when we come in the right way. If you throw the gate open and charge in there, the pigs absolutely recognize something's going on. The reaction is rather strong from time to time. So it's all part of it. You know, what we do in the industry to raise the pigs and give them, you know, the nutrition, the air quality, water, all the things we do so that they grow and produce, it would be foolish to think that we're going to totally disregard welfare as we move them to the final stage where we're going to finish the cycle. It's all part of it. It's a hard message to get out there for those people that don't believe we really care for the animals.
The opportunity for natural behaviors. What's that look like from PIC's perspective? Dr. Edwards, how does that affect some of your research and things that you're trying to understand? In the simplest form, it's toys in a pen. How far does that go now, this opportunity to exhibit natural behaviors?
Well, I think part of that is how far do you want it to go? When you look at some of the opportunities for production, and now whether people are taking advantage of that or not, you know, so specifically thinking of like the GAP 1-5 welfare systems, you know, I mean, these go from, you know, level one with some pen gestation, a little bit of outdoor, maybe some toys, all the way to almost a completely feral pig, you know, where there's a fence to keep them contained and that's about it. And everything else is purely natural behavior. Now, is that the best production system when you're trying to balance economics and welfare? Probably not, without a significant premium for it. So I think from our standpoint, from a genetic standpoint, it's creating a pig that has that ability to perform in whatever level of welfare that the producer chooses to achieve. And that can be, I mean, obviously there's a minimum standard. You know, we're not interested in, you know, producers who are abusing animals or those same major feed allergies, those things, when given the adequate feed and housing and, you know, thirst and non-abuse situations, they should perform as well in that as they would with as much open pen, open, you know, pasture raised, so what have you. So, I mean, from the genetic standpoint as well, when we're thinking about this globally, all right, these welfare standards are very different in each market, in each country or region. So you have the traditional, you know, confinement production systems is here in North America to, you know, we have a lot of pigs in England where everything is, you know, pasture raised, it's almost illegal to have confinement. There's still some opportunities for it, but the vast majority of pigs are on pasture in a rotational pasture type system from the 70s around here. So, you know, they perform in both. So genetically speaking, you know, we need to have a pig that's going to work in those environments. What those environments are within reason are dependent upon where the producer chooses to go and where they feel they can make the best opportunity.
I think it's a trade-off. You know, this is a little bit old, but National Pork Board, when sow housing really became kind of top of mind, they put out a chart that showed, here are all the parameters of welfare, like mortality, injury, ability to forage, expression of natural behavior. And then they kind of had conventional systems versus the other spectrum was totally free range. And then maybe one was like a group system in the middle. And it was a total trade-off, right? You give animals more opportunity to perform natural behaviors. And oftentimes those production settings, you compromise animal injury or morbidity or mortality. So I think it's striking a balance that has a lot to do with the facility. It has a lot to do with the producer themselves. It has a lot to do with the pigs that are in that facility. And so it's always a trade-off. And I think it's a challenge, I guess. There's not one way to do it. And there's never going to be a perfect way where, you know, animal welfare is absolutely perfect and there's no stress, because that's not normal. That's not reality. So I think it's just having the non-negotiables. You know, you don't want animals to be abused or neglected, providing them their basic needs. And then that next step to kind of, how do we take it to the next level and provide that balance of all the parameters that go into it, an animal's well-being.
Table's open. Questions?
I'll start and I'll ask a question to Lily. Being, you know, in academia, not necessarily the industry, where do you feel is the biggest opportunity for the industry in terms of welfare? Where have we missed the boat, or what is the low-hanging fruit we really need to focus on?
I think sometimes that's a little species dependent in terms of issues, but I think pain mitigation is an area that comes up a lot. So I think figuring out what we want to do in that space is a big one. I think housing continually gets brought up. You know, I think the ship has sailed on some of those issues, but if we think about other species, I mean, cattle tend to not get talked about as much, but I think there's a lot more interest in calf housing. So do we individually house calves, or do we group house them? Separation from the dam at birth. So that's coming up a lot. I think housing too, if we think about feedlots, shade. So it's kind of these, I guess the unintended consequences of some of the production tools that we use, and being able to address those. The other thing I guess I would say, I think what is coming into a lot more focus is the worker animal, like human animal interaction. There's been quite a bit of research on that, but I think it's coming into light a little bit more, and kind of what we talked about earlier, like training. What's the most effective training? We have a kind of changing demographic of worker. And so how do we adjust that training? How do we get more people to want to come to agriculture? And I think that's a link there. So I would say those are some of the things. So I'll ask one. I don't know if there's a real answer to it, but so I think we say, you know, don't rush, take your time. But if we think about the reality of a lot of the situations, I mean, I'm always rushing. I think if we think about the plant, you know, there's chain speed that we have to keep up with. And so how do we say don't rush, but at the same time, I think there's this inherent rush to a system.
My first tool with that is to lean on some of the research that's out there, looking at things like group size. The one study where you looked at 4 versus 8, that moving groups of 4 was faster. My mantra is, if you're in the business of moving livestock, you've got to walk a lot. Trying to save trips isn't going to save you time. More trips, smaller groups will generally get the job done faster with less stress for all involved, pigs and people, cattle and people, whatever. So measure it, then do it. Some of the most effective training I've been able to do was be on a farm where they're loading 2 trucks, sit back and watch them load a truck, counting hotshot use and other things. And then spend 15 minutes while the next truck's backing up to talk about what they did well and where I see opportunities, and then the next load help coaching them through. Once they see there's a different way, you know, and not just saying, well, this is how the pig reacts, but getting in the pen and showing them. They observed it, but they didn't see it, so to speak. So helping them see what's happening. One of the clearest things I ever saw, there was a guy was moving pigs down the walkway in the barn. About every other step, he was just touching the pig at the back with a hot shot, was not applying electricity, thinking he's beating up the group. Every time he touched that pig, the pig slowed down slightly, arched to look back at him, like, why in the heck are you touching me? I'm walking. And if I'd had a video of that, that would be such an excellent tool to show that we think what we're doing is helping, and it's not. But in the end, I mean, we're dealing with intelligent beings that react in somewhat predictable ways. They haven't all read the book or seen the movie. Once we understand how they do react, they've got the experience and they know things, but they don't know that they know them yet. And when you can say, well, you know, when this happens, well, that's because of, and then the light comes on, they go, they're like my middle school ag students back in, many years ago. It's just like, oh, wow, that's cool. But it's getting to that point where that it's not just, I got to move these stupid pigs, to, oh, it, you know, it, game on. I'm going to get you to go and you're going to like it. You know, that's sort of the challenge that we got to get to, you know, but we're getting a lot closer. I mean, we've made, in my 28 years with PIC, I've seen a world of improvement, including in myself. I mean, I guarantee you, I've done it wrong. And that's the thing, is there's always something new to learn. And we've got to keep doing it. We've got to keep learning it.
Dr. Edwards, resources that an organization, a producer, should turn to that you might have at your disposal. Somebody saying, hey, I want to learn more about this. Where would you send them?
So I guess, I mean, I would probably say ask a local university. I don't know if there's always extension agents in pigs, but, you know, for example, if you know me, you can call me and I can help kind of find some stuff and resources for you and send them to you. So I think in terms of specific questions, I think that happens a lot. I have access to a lot of research articles that people don't, and, you know, can kind of synthesize that into something that's useful. I think if you think about just general pig handling tips, I mean, I think Google can be your friend. A lot of extension university departments put out a lot of information. National Pork Board has lots of training information. So I think it's just a matter of being okay asking and asking for help and looking for those resources.
Resources. Does PIC have things in particular that help us understand the relationship between animal handling and meat quality? What do you like to use when people ask questions about that?
From an external source, you know, I think there's some, especially at the plant level, there's some good stuff from NAMI, North American Meat Institute. Farm and plant, I believe you can find some information from PACO. Certainly, if you can't find the resources you need, if you go to the PACO website, you can find a list of all the certified auditors for farm, plant, and every species, and you'll probably contact one of them to help you. At least the ones I know would be more than happy to help someone free of charge when it's questions or information. So you've got those resources, you know, the National Pork Board, as Lily mentioned. From a PIC standpoint, I mean, we try to keep our finger on the pulse of that. We do have documents dealing with, you know, transportation stress. Our wean to finish manual would have some of that information that we've discussed today in terms of barn alley width and ramp information. We have our pork quality blueprint, which is our standard SOPs for handling pigs and from the farm through from really genetics through the slaughter process to ensure proper meat quality. So when we think of that, I mean, it goes beyond just the pig stress and welfare, but it's certainly there and as a component, because it's, you know, one of the last times we can, you know, make a big impact. There's plenty of resources out there for anybody that really wants to get it, and every university with an animal science department is going to have plenty.
This is The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast, sharing information to improve your organization and the industry. Many thanks to Colorado State's Dr. Lily Edwards and PIC's Chuck Boer and Brandon Fields. You're welcome to share these podcasts widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. for PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain. I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.